This is the Lunch Bite with Ian Bass.
Very excited for this interview because I've actually learned a lot more about Alan Knott Craig, besides his awesome articles and his optimism. So Alan was almost expelled in grade 11, and he was voted least likely to pass his final year at university because he didn't attend any lectures. And after qualifying as a CA, no one would hire him. But in spite of that, you've done pretty well. Alan, welcome to the Lunch Bite. How are you?
Thanks for the invitation, Ian.
Great. And thank you for joining us in these very different circumstances. Usually I have the pleasure of sitting across from my guests and getting that facial expression and getting all of this enthusiasm. But now we're having to do this via technology and via Skype. But fortunately, Alan, we do have this technology. So tell us a little bit about what you're involved with at HeroTel.
Oh, I have a stake in a business called HeroTel, and I'm the chairman. I founded it about 7 years ago, and we focus on providing broadband to the home in rural South Africa. It's quite an exciting business. Luckily, we're doing quite well in these times. But, you know, my real passion more lies in an NGO called Project Isizwe, which is kind of dedicated and that's kind of dedicated towards trying to find solutions for bringing affordable broadband into rural communities, like poor communities. So, you know, I'm fortunate. I'm in the internet game. It's a good game to be in.
Absolutely. So this providing broadband and providing the internet to everyone, it's become not a privilege. It's becoming a necessity. And tell us a little bit, how did you come up with, where did you get this epiphany about the need to focus on this so that people can get access to information as quickly as possible?
I was in 2010. My first daughter was 2 years old, and I was sitting there watching her on her tablet, and it dawned on me that she's already got every advantage in the world, and yet she's still pulling further away from kids down the road in Kayamundi simply because she's got access to internet. Mm-hmm. I'm not against inequality per se. I mean, there's always going to be a world where people have and people don't have, but it's just not fair to me if people have unequal access to opportunity. And the internet just gives privileged children even greater access to opportunities. So from that point on, I started to think about ways that I could make money as well as kind of bridge the digital divide. And actually, my first attempt at that was Mixit. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, wow. I remember Mixit, and I'm sure many of our listeners would remember Mixit. So in this age now, and I'm referring to that awesome article that you wrote, and I will reshare it for everyone that's listening. You spoke about online education as a huge opportunity. And it is an opportunity. Of course, it's an opportunity for most people, but there are still a big segment of our community and our population that don't have access to all these, if I can call it, all this technology. How do we address this? What is the silver bullet, if there is one, or where do we start the journey?
Well, the long-term solution is going to be fiber to the home for the whole of South Africa. I mean, and really the only way that gets accelerated from a state perspective is the state would have to make financing available, not in the form of subsidies, but in the form of kind of debt. And that's happening. So you don't have to worry about that. In the next 10 years, everyone's going to have fiber to the home. That's going to be the most affordable way for people to get on the internet. In the short term, and we have to solve the problem in the short term. We actually already started Project Isizwe, started a project with a government school in Stellenbosch, whereby, you know, some of the kids for that school live in Kayamundi, which is a township, and they don't have home internet. But the school has had to restart classes online because of the lockdown. And yet the kids that are not able to get online because they don't have access to internet are falling behind the academic year. So what Renish did is it asked Project Isizwe whether we could arrange the kind of technical side of things, and they found the money. So, you know, wealthy parents kind of contribute towards connectivity for the poorer kids. And that's kind of, I think in the short term, that's the fastest solution. You know, I mean, we have to have something, especially for this lockdown. You can't have, you know, 50% of children in South Africa failing their academic year simply because they don't have internet right now.
Absolutely. And I guess it's one thing to have the technology, but it's another thing to have teachers and resources that the kids can access. So I guess it's an opportunity to upskill our teachers, but at the same time, give kids access to resources that they would never have had in the past.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you think about the historical conversation about how to fix education, it seems to have been focused on get textbooks to everybody, build more schools, and train more teachers and get them to live in places like Butterworth and Forstress, you know? You know, you're never going to get the best maths teacher in the world. It's very unlikely that the best maths teacher in the world is going to go live in a rural town. It doesn't matter what country you're in.
Right.
And now that the narrative is moving towards online education, people finally realize you don't need to have a great math teacher living in Butterworth. You can have a great math teacher living in Joburg or Cape Town or New York. And all the kids all over the country can access that person's content, provided they've got affordable internet.
Yeah. Alan, you made some predictions at the beginning of April. Let's check in and see how South Africa's positive scenario is panning out. Our president has been praised both locally and internationally for his leadership. And last night we all heard that he's unveiled a 500 billion rand package to shore up our economy, which quite frankly has been devastated beyond comprehension from the lockdown measures. If you were making the announcement tomorrow evening, how would you approach the lockdown challenge?
Well, I mean, I don't want to second guess the president. I think him and his advisors have done some amazing work. You know, if you were to compare him to Donald Trump or even Boris Johnson, I mean, we're extremely fortunate to have him. And if you think that not long ago we had Jacob Zuma, I mean, we just so bloody lucky. Yeah. you know, I think you've got to take a step back and think about the scenarios. There is a scenario that there's nothing that the government can do to rescue us from the economic crisis that is going to happen, and therefore it's game over. So there is a scenario where we're actually completely all screwed inside. Yeah. And you know, what's the point of thinking about something like that unless you're going to do something about that? And what are you going to do? You're going to basically have to get out of the country. So, you know, my own opinion is I can't get out of the country. I'm an economic prisoner. My money's here. My family's here. I don't want to go. So I don't think about that option. Then there's a scenario where it turns out in relative terms that South Africa handles this crisis better than most countries, and we definitely are handling it much better than most countries right now. I mean, literally most countries in the world are handling it worse than us.
Mm-hmm.
And we get the economic stimulus package. Now, the risk there is that the country doesn't execute on it. You know, and we know the government, the ANC, hasn't always had a great track record for getting things done.
Right.
And if we don't deliver the stimulus, well, we're just going to muddle along. But it's not going to be the end of the world. You know, the scenario where we muddle along is the same scenarios we've had for the last 20 years. I mean, it's not something that is catastrophic. But on the other hand, if we do get it right, if Cyril Ramaphosa's administration and obviously all of us get together and we make it happen, South Africa is going to be the best place in the whole world to be living in the next decade. Because we're going to have this economic stimulus, infrastructure spend, which is going to spread all across the whole country.
Right.
You're going to have a booming economy. And relatively speaking, we're going to do better than other countries, which is going to help our currency as well. So you can't just look at it in absolute terms. You can't just say South Africa in absolute terms is a 6 out of 10. And we might be a 6 out of 10, but if everybody else is 4 out of 10, we're going to be doing better.
That's quite amazing. So Alan, I had to pick up a point that you mentioned in your article. And you said that, and I quote, that South Africa sailed through the global financial crisis thanks to the state-sponsored infrastructure projects for the 2010 World Cup. My question to you is, are we lucky, or are South Africans collectively creative in our diversity and attitude of when the going gets tough, the tough get going?
Well, I think there's a certain element of natural selection that's happened in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, since the 80s, you know, people that couldn't handle the heat got out of the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the type of person I think a generally resilient and generally optimistic person that's living here. I mean, if you're not optimistic by nature, it's hard to understand why you're living in South Africa. and yet, because we have a critical mass of a middle class and a skills base, the country doesn't go down the tubes like a Venezuela or a Zimbabwe. So, you know, we've got problems. South Africa is a microcosm of the whole world. You know, there's a percentage of our population that's very well off and lucky, and a percentage that's very unlucky and, I guess, struggling. And we have to deal with that inequality. So, you know, whether you're living in Switzerland or living in Joburg, you're still confronted with that. And in the long run, we all have to deal with that.
Yeah. Alan, last question just before we run out of time. I want to just ask you from your own personal perspective, what would be the most important thing that we need to consider when easing the lockdown tomorrow? What is really important for South Africa? And as responsible South Africans, how do we respond in ensuring that we don't undo all the good that we've done over the last few weeks?
I'm no expert on this, but I mean, from my perspective, it seems that the economy has to restart, and the way to minimize any health impact is to lockdown vulnerable communities. That includes people that are over the age of 80, people with autoimmune disease, people with diabetes, people with heart disease, obese people, you know, anybody who's basically in the risk category, if you look at North Italy, they should be isolated. The rest of the country got to get back to work, you know, to save some jobs. It's still going to have an economic impact, but we've got to go from this horizontal national lockdown to a vertical lockdown where certain communities are kind of protected. And for the rest of us, we can just try to start getting the system going again. You know?
Great. Alan, thank you so much for making the time. Keep us optimistic. And we're going to check in again with you in the next couple of weeks and see how South Africa is progressing. Alan O'Craig, if we want to get more information on your initiative, where can we find out more about Isizwe?
www.projectisizwe.org.
Alan, take care of yourself and your family, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks, bud. All the best, sir.
Cheers. Thank you.